Hi, I'm Bob Acton, and welcome to the Color and Ceramics Podcast. Today, I'm pleased to share a conversation I had with Russell Kingston from Devonshire in England. Russell produces beautiful slipware done in the tradition of Devonshire, but with a contemporary edge that I think fits nicely into the modern home. And I think you'll love his work. He has some beautiful colors and surface designs using a red, locally sourced clay, a white slip, and a finish with a clear glaze using oxides. And of course, you can find links to his work in the show notes. So let's get to the interview.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Hey, Russell, thanks so much for joining me today on the Color and Ceramics Podcast. I am pumped to have you here. I love your slip work and the colors and surface designs that you use in your work. So I think I'm really interested in finding out about your work, and I hope our audience is as well. So welcome.
Hello.
You know, Russell, it seems to me that you've been doing this work for a little while. I don't think you started just yesterday. So I wonder if you could give the audience a little understanding of kind of where you've come from. Like, where did you start with this? And a little bit about your journey.
I've made stuff my whole life, I suppose. Ceramics was late, medium late, I suppose. But through school, and it was always art, and you know, I was all right at other subjects, but I couldn't concentrate, and I couldn't be bothered half the time to like put my energy into it. So art and like DT and practical, anything with my hands, it generally was. So I did that, and then was a carpenter for a while. Around with timber framing, and my grew up building with my dad. He was a stonemason, and my brother, and did a bit of part-time work in my mum's shop when she was a florist. So there's always stuff, doing stuff, and like I was always making things, and I like structures, and I like functional stuff, I suppose. So I did a foundation degree in ceramics, which was on a whim at one point, got really into it.
Yeah.
Then I was doing ash glazes, stoneware. And then I moved back to North Devon after being away. North Devon's where I'm from. Read the history. That is slipware. It's one of the places of slipware. So then I was like, well, that's that. I'm doing that then, I suppose. And then I just played with slip for 4 or 5 years. And now I've been doing slipware for about 10 years now, I think, and ceramics for about 15.
Yeah, cool. So you're a full-time production potter, it sounds like.
Yeah, full-time potter. Production happens because you need to make money, I suppose.
How true is that? Yeah.
Because you can't just make one mug, can you? So you know, to make a living, you need to be, if you want to make tableware, you need to make loads of it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. yeah for sure. I think that's probably true about a lot of things, though. You can't just make one or two pieces. You need to make a lot in order to get your work out there and have galleries and whatnot carry your work. And I see that there's lots of places in the UK that are carrying your work.
Yeah, I do all right. I get around, I suppose. I feel like my work's all right at the moment. And it does a thing, and it, you know, it's bright, it's a bit vibrant, but it's also kind of traditional, which I like.
So we'll talk about that in a bit for sure. I'm excited about that. Now, you said that you had moved back to Devon and did some research looking at the history of clay there. And so that sounds like to me you were inspired by some people or some things. Can you talk a little bit about what's inspired you to do the work you do?
Well, you've got to like make a decision which route you're going to go, and you to get somewhere, you've got to kind of develop something. You can't just jump around all the time. And I quite like being from Devon. It's a big county. It's like counties are like states of England, but they're tiny compared to states. But Devon is one of the biggest counties in England, and I like it. It's where I'm from. It's like green. It's got the beach. It's got moors and trees, and it's country. And then I kind of had this history in my head that I didn't really know was there, I suppose. And then I read about it, and I realized that it would had been all around, but you kind of just soaked it in without knowing about it. And then I realized I kind of half knew about it when I started reading about it, and I was like, oh, well, oh yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense. And I like the tradition of the like medieval, because that's what England has. It has a long history. So I really like that, bringing that forwards instead of leaving it behind and just moving on. And then kind of making a contemporary version of an older thing. In North Devon, it was the Fishleys of Fremington, and they were like a production pottery. A lot of it got exported. North Barnstaple and Biddeford is like a pottery area in the old days, and a lot of it, because Biddeford's straight out to the sea, went straight over to America, so half of it's over in America. And yeah, I kind of prefer the like normal pots, not necessarily the like my pots are quite decorated. They wouldn't have been like that in the old days. I prefer the like the pots that probably got smashed because they would have been used, and they were like nothing, and they weren't marked, and they were done really quickly, and that quickness bred this like spontaneity of a thing being made, so it could be used, so it could be cheap. So that people could use it and then break it and then use another one. You can't do that in the same way now, because world doesn't work. Cheap things are plastic and other things, but it all comes from that kind of idea,
Yeah,
I would
cool.
say.
Now, so slipware was really commonly used in your area. Could you just give a brief description of slipware to somebody who might not know exactly what that is?
Okay, so slip is a liquid clay. Slipware is pottery, general pottery, like anything decorated with liquid clays. So generally, traditionally, it would have been in my area a red clay as the body of the pot, and then decorated in a white liquid, and then sometimes scratched through, which is sgraffito. Sometimes finger swipes just through while it's wet. A lot of the time there would be a lot of the clay body still showing, because the whole ground was red clay. They find these pockets of white clay, and they were like a bit more precious and like less abundant, so they'd make liquid out of them, and then they could turn the red pots into white pots without using up all the white clay. I feel like everywhere in the world where there were two clays, they kind of did a version of it, because it's like simple, and it's like mud with mud, and then you've got your thing, and that white mud with an orange mud makes whatever.
That's cool. That's really neat stuff. So tell us about your work. I know that your work has some color to it, right? So it's not just red and white. So tell us about your approach to the functional work that you do and how you approach what you do, and maybe we'll talk a
So,
little about surface after. Yeah.
yeah, so my kind of thing, I like tradition. So my kind of what I've kind of stumbled into by making work is I'm make, I suppose, like a contemporary traditional. So new, old, which I quite like that term. I make with terracotta, which is red clay. I decorate with a white slip, and then I slip trail generally with a black slip over the top of that. That's done with a bit of gusto. It's spontaneous. The idea that I realized what I was striving for now after doing it for a while is celebration of liquid. Slip is liquid. So it's like the decoration is a celebration of what clay can do in its liquid form. Which and those are the ways I decorate you can't do unless it's liquid. So that's kind of a celebration, and that just happened by looking at all these different things in the past and then making marks and looking at the marks. And I've got a repertoire of lines, dots, zigzags, sometimes crisscrosses, very and it's a combination of all of those with five colors. So I've got a clear glaze, so I color my slips black and white, and then all the actual color, the like not black or white color, is from glaze. So I put glaze over the top. So I've got a clear glaze, which is like an off-white cream color. I've got a honey, which is quite yellow. I've got an ambery like orange, and then a blue and a green, and it's combinations of those. I generally use a cream with one of the colors because it makes the color pop more. You know, it's that it that's just what it does. If you have a whole pot that's one color, it's kind of that color, and that's a nice thing. But if you have a like a stripe of like cream down the side, then that blue all of a sudden is really blue.
It's a contrast, but yeah, absolutely.
That's the
Yeah. Now, when I look at your work, I see that. I'm looking at some pots now on my screen as we're chatting, and you will contrast even a darker shade of one color with a lighter shade of the same color, along with some of your lines that you use in
Yeah,
there.
black lines sometimes, or yeah, a nice old slippy line in between. I find it work. I used to color the some slips, like green slip, and then I had like a honey glaze and a clear glaze. So then some of my slips were colored and some of my glazes were colored, and then it just didn't really work in my head, so I stopped coloring the slips. I just have a black and white for contrast, and then I color my glazes, and that allows me quite a lot of freedom because I can make all the pots and then color them how I want afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
And I decorate in my set. You know, you make rules for yourself, don't you? So I and things that work and don't work. So I decorate knowing that that's going to be a color and that's not going to be a color. Like that will be, you know, the cream bit, and that will be a color bit. I don't necessarily think, oh, that's going to be an orange one or that, until I'm glazing them.
So
And I that really.
it sounds like you have a really spontaneous way of working that you've got your pieces finished and I've used slip, so I assume you're slipping use when they're in a leather hard stage, are you? Is that and so that sounds like you approach your work very spontaneously to get that energy and the movement in the slip as it moves down the piece.
Yeah, definitely. That's the same kind of vibe I want for how I make as well. So I don't turn anything. I don't like turning. I haven't got time for it in my brain. It doesn't do anything for me. So I channel these old in my head, these old potters just making I know, bowl after bowl after bowl, and that's all they ever did. They were the bowl guy. They make the bowls. It becomes normal. They make them so quickly that the quickness of that thing becomes its life. I'm never going to be as quick as them to do that because they're the bowl guy and they've made a, and they had to work,
They
15
did
hour
millions of
days.
them.
But that's my, in my head, that's the idea. And that's only become the way because that's the way I ended up working. I tried turning and stuff and it didn't work. And I used to do so North Devon, one of the North Devon traditions, I'm from North Devon, is sgraffito. So you make a pot out of red clay, you cover it in white clay, you'd let that go leather hard or bone dry. In the old days, they probably let it go in bone dry, but you don't want silicosis. So these days you'd do it leather hard. And then you scratch through to make a design. That's like a really North Devon style. So I started off doing that and I just found that each pot took so long to decorate that it was doing my head in. And I was this, it didn't gel with me. And I was like, until I picked up a slip trailer, I looked at some more contemporary North Devon style. So Clive Bowen, if you've heard of Clive Bowen, and his son Dylan Bowen, which are two ends of the same spectrum. Clive's like traditional, but moving on. And he was started in the 70s or whatever. So he took it from one thing and moved it onto another thing. And then Dylan, because he's got such a famous dad, was like, oh, well, I could do that, but then I'm just going to be that. So then he went like fully crazy and like slip everywhere and like make a pot and then turn it upside down and, like really free, which is cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
So I saw a bit of that and I was like, oh yeah, I could fit in the middle there somewhere probably. And that's kind of where I've ended up, I think.
Yeah,
A
cool.
bit free and a bit tradition.
And so one of the things that I'm hearing from you is that one of the keys to your success has been to recognize inside yourself what you love and what fits best with you, and for you then to make the work that fits best with you. You're not sort
Yeah,
of.
you can't make work to that you think people are going to like, or you think that it's cool, because there won't be an instant, there won't be, it won't sing. You know what I mean? It like when I was making these graffito mugs with like loads of mackerel around the outside, and they sold really well, and I was done with it, and I was like still making them because they were selling, and this was quite early, and then I like just decided I wasn't going to make them anymore because they didn't do anything for me. And then I found the more I make work that I like, the better it sells.
Absolutely. There's an energy. I think there's an energy that we put into our work that somehow, I don't know the mechanism, but somehow that emerges when somebody else starts to look at our work. They pick up on that energy.
It's the same with music. It's,
Totally.
you can try and manufacture music that people like, and some people will like it, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it won't change anything. It won't like make a new genre. It won't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Now, you've used the phrase, and I've seen it on your website, this notion of using a modern approach as well as traditional, bringing the new with the old, so to speak. Can you describe how you do that or how you think about that?
So, if you were to be completely tradition, like I like tradition essentially, and if you keep tradition exactly the same, it doesn't change at all. You've got one thing. I like traditions that evolve with now. So, I feel like there's you can't have I can't have done what I've done without what's happened before me, so I don't want to ignore what's happened before me, but I don't want to make the person before me's pots. I want to make my pots for now for me, Not necessarily for me because I don't want them. I want other people to have them, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah, I know exactly.
I want to make something that feels of now. And like so I've developed the cut my colors, which are quite bright but muted, if that's a thing. For what my eye would like rather than what I think looks good in the line of the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and the same with shapes, and it's all the same. It's like a thing. If you're making functional work, the thing's still got to do the thing. So the bowl's got to have cereal in it, or the baker's got to be able to cook a pie. And but you can change anything about that as long as it does the thing, and someone enjoys it doing the thing. And once it becomes annoying to do the thing, you've gone too far, unless that's the idea in this, you want to take it away from its function. But I like that's half the reason I like it, because I like food. So it the functional pottery is like food and craft, and you get to make stuff,
And there's a
so
sense of community too, because
yeah.
when we're eating and using ceramics as part of our food production or our serving, there's other people there. We're having a sense of community over the clay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you first cooked something when you're little, I don't know if you cook something, it's probably the first time you cook like an apple pie or whatever you've cooked, and you like serve it, and people are like, oh, this is really tasty, and you made that. And then the next level of that is you make a dish, then you make the pie, and then you serve that, and you're like, it's full circle. And then once you buy pot, I buy a lot of pots from other people. We only have handmade pots in our kitchen. Obviously, we've got metal and other things as well. But there's pots that you gravitate towards using for something because they're perfect for that. You've got all your friends in your kitchen, even if they're not there. You're like, oh, so and so made that, Josie made that, blah blah blah. And then that's all on the table together, and it kind of just enhances the whole situation, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. I've got a collection of mugs that I've
Yeah.
acquired from potters around the world, and so lots of times our friends would come over and open up the cupboard to
Yeah.
pick the mug they want to
Yeah,
use,
yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah,
Because
yeah.
we don't have any commercial stuff there. So that's great. That's awesome. Now, one of the things that you've mentioned is the form that you're using, and when we're putting on color and surface design, it has to marry with the form. Can you tell us a little bit about how you think about that?
There are definitely shapes that work better with certain bands of color. I tend to just make what I want now and then decorate it. I don't tend to, because I've done enough round things and I've done enough straight things, I know roughly what's going to work. I only get into like a flow state, like if I'm making loads of something, when I'm decorating. Sometimes decorating is like I've got to decorate, and like because you have to decorate to finish things before it dries out. And sometimes it's like, oh, I get to decorate. But I find that I get most into it if I've got like 80 plates. Plates are always a good one because they're flat, and they're like just a practice. You haven't got any gravity against you with a plate. All the slip is flat.
That's right, yeah.
This is totally different once you've got a vertical surface.
And you get to see the whole thing too. Whereas a bowl or a jug or something, it's got another side that you've got to either turn the piece or you walk around it. Yeah.
Which is nice as well because you can do two sides, I do like bands sometimes. So I do like two lines of slip and then something in between those, like a zigzag or some dots or But then sometimes on one, I'll do a band with zigzags and then flip it around and then do a band with dots so that you've got kind of two pots, even though it's one pot.
Two pots in one. Hey, Tommy, you were talking about bands that you use, and I think visually, this is an auditory podcast, so people are listening as opposed to watching. And of course, on our information, we'll put links to your work, but and so people can go and see it there. And I really hope people do go and see your work, because it's not only beautiful, but I think they'll really start to get a sense of what we're
What I'm on
talking about here.
about.
Now, but you've used the word band. So do you think about your work, like if you're making something, a vertical piece, like let's say a jug that's taller versus a bowl that's a bit flatter, do you approach horizontal lines or vertical lines a little differently?
It depends on how I'm feeling, I suppose. Some pots you want on the whirler so you can do it 360. Some pots are too big to do that. If you're making a storage jar that's like 60 centimeters tall, that I'll have that on a big whirler, but that takes some time. You have to think about that. You only get one go. You don't get any redos. So once you've started, you kind of have to have a plan to start the pot. You can't just go in. Oh, you could go in, but I don't. I have a rough idea of, and that will change if the mark I've made is interesting. Or if I was going to do quite a busy plate, some are quite busy, and I do a nice mark and I see it, I'll go, oh, I'll leave that because that's nice. So I don't plan. I kind of plan, but don't plan. I just feel, I suppose. It's quite hard to explain, because I don't normally have to explain
That's a
it.
you just do it. I often that's that is true, right? We have when we're talking, we end up translating what we do with our fingers, right? And into words. I often think that's true about athletes. I'll see some sports announcer ask an athlete why they did something or how they did it, and they go, and you know,
Just did it.
their answers are kind of, well, I just did it, right? So
I kicked the ball or whatever.
Well, that's very cool. I really enjoy that that notion of spontaneity, and but behind the spontaneity is a real solid understanding of the technical aspects of what you do.
I mean, you can just slip trail a pot like first time. But once you've used a slip trailer 20,000 times, let's say, you know roughly what it's going to do. You know the different thicknesses if what you're trying to achieve. I have like five or six different nozzles in my slip trailer. So a slip trailer, for anyone that doesn't know, is like a turkey baster, but and you fill it with liquid clay and then you decorate. That's my main form of decoration. I do a few finger marks here and there, but it's mainly pour some white slip over it and then slip trail some black, or pour some black and then slip trail some white, or pour some black, then pour some white, then slip trail some black. But it's all done within a minute of the pot being decorated, or a minute or two.
It's pretty quick, that work.
And then you can't touch it again either because you'll make a mark. So you have to work out ways of moving pots that are leather hard and getting wet again because you've covered them in liquid to somewhere out the way that they don't need to be touched for a couple of days.
That's off. That's been always been a big challenge for me. I'll move it now. Yeah, darn,
And then you
I
touch the one
marked
behind
it.
it. Yeah, that's
That's
classic.
crazy. Hey, so you've been doing this work. You make beautiful work, and you've come up some great designs, but I bet you that you've had some challenges over the years that you've had to face in terms of m making the beautiful work that you make. What challenges might you have encountered, and how did you deal with them?
Well, it's ceramics is just a new challenge every time you do anything, it presents a learning lesson, doesn't it? Which you can either ignore or you can learn from. It's because it's like you just decide to do a thing The way I work, I make a lot of pots. So you have to learn to manage a lot of pots. You then have to have somewhere to put them. Then you have to learn how to fire that many pots. So I suppose the challenge is like allowing myself to make what I want to make in the quantities I want to make, and learning what that actually looks like in terms of a kiln, a thing, you know, studio, how many shelves do I need? More is always the answer. How many shelves you need?
Yes, absolutely.
And then like colors that you develop over a year or half a year or however long it takes, because nothing's quick, is it? You get a test out however long after you've done it, and it's not quite what you wanted, or it is what you wanted, and then you put it on and it's totally different the next time. And then you finally decide you're doing that thing, and then you mix up a batch and it's fine for a year or two, and then it starts reacting with something else all of a sudden. So then one of the materials that you've been buying has changed somewhere, and that
Yes.
def yeah, which is a classic. So it's just like, I think overcoming things is more just about listening to what's happening. And I can't afford to pay someone to fix a kiln or do this or do that. So every challenge, I'm like, can I do that? I don't know. Probably. Let's have a go. If I can't, I'll put my hands up and go, I need some help. Pay someone or like get some advice. If not, it's just like, bodge it, fix it, see if it works. And if it doesn't work, why doesn't it work? And if you can learn from that and make it better next time, it doesn't have to be perfect next time, but as long as it's like forwards instead of backwards, you will go backwards though by doing that process. But you'll learn if you're looking at what you get. I think one of the like most the strongest kind of things I've learned from ceramics is like acceptance and looking. Like, you've gone down this rabbit hole of what you're trying to achieve. Only you are ever looking at that. You like, so you make something, you put it in the kiln, it's not what you wanted. If you can immediately ignore that, or not ignore that, accept that it's not what you wanted, and look at what you've got, you'll learn loads more than going, oh, I didn't do that. How am I going to do that? You know, you can still try and achieve that thing that you're trying to achieve, but without looking at what you've actually done, you're not going to progress towards that. And without looking at the mistakes and going, actually, I like that. How do I redo that mistake? Or like, you know, that's how you kind of develop your voice in, you know, because that's only those things that you've done, only you've done. Nobody's told you to do that mistake or whatever. And if you see that mistake and go, I hate that, that's fine. And you can then try and avoid that mistake again. But then if you look at that and go, I wasn't trying to do that at all, but I really like that. How do I do mistakes more often? You know?
Yeah, that worked. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
And
yeah.
then it's the same with that. So then it's like, I've got this 12 cubic foot electric kiln, which I've done all my, I'm a firm believer in, any kiln can make a good pot. And anybody, you know, that I'm not like an elitist. Some people think like wood firing's the way, and wood firing's beautiful. I love it. Some people think you can't do it in a gas kiln compared to wood, you know, and I don't think that way. I think they're all viable, they're all beautiful things if you make what you want to make out of it. So I've got this, most of my work was fired in an electric kiln for ages. I needed a bigger kiln. I was never going to get a power supply for the kiln size I wanted to build. So then I built a gas kiln to achieve what I needed to do, because it was volume is all I wanted. But then that all my work is oxidized, so then you're bringing in a flame into an oxidized situation, and when you reduce slip earthenware slip wear, it really knackers it like bad ways, which I learned the hard way. So but that's only through doing that, and then you learn the limit. You've got to push that limit to learn it, you know?
I mean, really, what I hear you saying is that a good potter is somebody who's a great problem solver, right?
Adaptable.
Adaptable,
Yeah.
resilient, and being able to see what you've got in each firing, because I bet you, even though you're using an electric kiln,
In the
things
electric kiln, they can be different.
they can be different.
In the
That
gas kiln, they can be different. You know,
absolutely.
yeah.
That you have to take a certain mindset to your work. You have to have the right attitude. And that sounds like to me that you're there to observe and accept and see what's going on and to pay attention to the work, not just sit in judgment of it. Like, not just sit in,
Yeah.
that's good, bad, right? Or I'm happy or
Yeah,
not
yeah, yeah.
happy, but to dive into the
Because
piece of
also
paper.
it's what's the word? You know, art is to the beholder totally different from me and you.
Oh,
So
absolutely. Yeah.
you it's the classic, like you make a couple of pots, like say you make 10 jugs, one's your absolute favorite. You could like smash the others and not be bothered. That one's good. That one you think it's absolutely like nothing you wanted. You give it no time, sells first straight away.
It is true.
Yeah, but so now that also taught me of like there is a point where I'll go that I'm not even firing that on because I don't like it. But if it looks like a good jug, it's a good, you know, someone will like it. That's my kind of vibe, you know, and then I will fire it and it usually sells because someone will like it.
That's right. Everybody's got different tastes.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got one last question for you, and that is about any advice that you might have for what I would call a more junior potter, somebody who's coming up in the field and working hard to get better at what they're doing.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for them about how to achieve success?
Make loads of pots. I do quite a bit of teaching now, like master classes and things. And the whole, I kind of try and get them a bit frantic in because the, usually people want, well, from my courses, they want to make something and they want to decorate it. And it's 2 days. And you make something and then you've got to dry it and decorate it. But if they haven't made enough, they get 1 20-second go at decorating. And then that's over. So the like instead of faffing on that, just make another one. Instead of like you'll look back at the pots you make at the beginning and go, some of them will be really cool. And you'll go, oh, that was actually all right. And most of them you'll go, oh, that's a bit ropey. And even like a year, last year's pots, there's some really good ones. They're like the quality is getting better overall. Oh, there's a few ropey ones, you know. But for me, the best thing I could do is make more pots, because it's just repetition. And then once you've got the skills in your hands, just to remember what you're doing, without thinking, without fighting the process, like without fighting the wheel, like just thinking, oh, my hand's in the right place. When you can think about the pot or the decoration or the, you know, firing as a thing instead of you, your brain isn't used up learning it, you're doing it and you won't have mastered it. None of us have mastered it, but you'll be to a point where like you can write on a page. At some point in the past, you had to learn how to write on a page to get your hand to do that. And now you just write on a page. And it's the same with making a pot. So if you're making a mug, you'll be fighting making a cylinder over and over again. And it'll be frustrating and it's annoying. And just make another one. And then have a break, come back to it, and you'll realize your muscles will have remembered more than you think, and you'll be ahead than you were. But you will always move the goalposts straight away because that's what it is. You're always trying to go to the next thing. And that's one of the nice things about ceramics is it's a never-ending quest, as it were. Because as soon as you have achieved something, you've already got 10 things ahead of you that you're going, oh, that and that and that. And it's which branch you go off. And there's no right or wrong answer. And if people tell you can't do something, you'll work out a way. If you want to do it, you'll work out a way of doing it. So I would just say make loads of pots if you can.
Yeah,
Make loads of pots.
I think you're right. I think that muscle memory starts to occur, and you stop thinking about how to hold your fingers, and you start thinking about something else. And
Yeah.
so it's that journey that that we move through.
Yeah, and play as well is important.
Totally. Got to have some fun while you're doing it, don't you?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because else, what's the point?
That's right. Yeah, no, absolutely.
And sometimes it's a job, but sometimes it's wicked, you know, and there's a balance of everything, you know. It's not easy, but it's rewarding. There's always two sides of everything.
Well, I'm really appreciative, and I hope our audience is the same, of you spending some of your studio time here today with us, sharing with us a little bit about your journey and some ideas for people to take to their journey. So thank you so much, Russell.
Good. Thanks for having me. I hope I didn't waffle too much,
No, it was perfect. Thank
but
thank you.
cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.